Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters. My name is still Paul Madad. Hope everybody's doing great. All things considered, here we are, end of October. I'm excited for this one. I have Jerry Skolnick. He is regional sales director coming to us from a company called VirusStar. He is based in beautiful Southern California, San Diego. Jerry, good morning. How are things, man?
Good. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you. Do me a favor. Say hi to everybody and provide a quick intro here and we'll get started.
Sure. Hi, everyone. Yes, sunny San Diego, but I have not been here long. I was in New York for many years, as you could hear in my voice. So I've had the bad weather. I know what it's like. And it's nice being here in San Diego, especially being near my children. So that's great.
Jerry, talking about voice, how quickly could you pick up that I was Canadian?
Only if you said the word about, I would be able to do that. Because I know everybody says about.
I say about.
Okay, yeah. And I would not have picked up.
Oh, you wouldn't have picked up on my Canadian tint. All right.
Yeah. All I have to do is say coffee and water and it's all over.
Pretty much, right? Yeah. All right, good. Well, listen, nice to meet you. I appreciate you being here. You know, Jerry, as we've been talking about before we started to hit record here, the title of the podcast is called Your Intention Matters. And that's really built on my foundation that nothing is really given to any of us. And most of us in the world of sales and business never really thought we'd even get into the careers that we got into, let alone sustain, you know, a long careers in them. We all have meandering paths. Nothing is really given to us. And so I'm looking forward to you sharing your story. You ready to get going here?
Sure.
All right. So we're going to go back in time here, circa 1975, Jerry. 1975. I was in diapers, man. I love it. All right. We're going back. Long Island University. If I have this right, you graduated with a degree in English.
Correct.
Okay. Now, you have a pretty interesting career here with long stints in multiple different companies across multiple industries. But take me back to 75 and you're graduating. You're ready to get going with your life here. Were you like a fish out of water? Did you have any idea what you wanted to do? Were you just, okay, now what? Or like, talk to me about what you thought you'd be doing and what it was like back in the mid 70s as you were getting ready to start your career.
Okay. Well, I actually went to CW Post, which is a subsidiary, or if that's the correct word, for Long Island University. It's part of Long Island University. It's called CW Post. My career path at the beginning was pretty much set up for me. My dad was one of the, if not the biggest gas station guy in all of New York. So I really didn't have a choice at the time. I went into it. And then of course I branched out by myself with a partner, but I was in the gas station business for quite a long time, for about 30 years. And when you're making good money, it doesn't seem to bother you about what you're doing, meaning that what I'm basically saying is I was never in love with it, but I did very well with it. And I got married and had two kids, pretty young. I was young when my son was born and my daughter was born, but, financially I was doing fine. So we were able to do that. And, again, I was in the business for many, many years. And then of course, everything changed like everything does. As you get older, you realize no business does not somehow change, and you have to be on top of it every single day to know, to see where the changes are coming from.
And so with your dad being in that industry, oil and gas, so to speak, did you work for him early on?
Yeah, I worked for him early on. We had a very large location in Queens, in the five boroughs. And the average station at that time was doing about 50, 60,000 gallons. We were doing 660,000 gallons a month. I would come in at about, well, I was still getting school at Post, but right after school, I would go in the afternoons, and on the weekends, I'd work the whole weekend, and I'd be there from about 20 after 6 in the morning till about 7 o'clock at night. It was crazy.
And what were you doing?
Nonstop action. Oh, everything. We had like seven islands worth of gas. and everybody had to check out at the end of the day. I had to do checkouts. We had a tire store over there. We had a car wash in the back. We had a diagnostic center. And it was, like I said, from 20 after six until I went home, it was nonstop.
And so how many years did you work under your dad's umbrella?
From about 71 to about 1980, I guess.
Okay. So call it 9 years, including while you're in school.
Correct.
And then once you finished professionally full-time for about 5 years or so, the decision to branch out on your own, did that come with some resistance from your dad? Was that an easy decision? What was that like?
Well, it was a fairly easy decision. A guy that I had known from the past just came into the picture, and we kind of just branched out. And my father was a tyrant. I mean, you don't have the biggest pumping Exxon Mobil, Shell, Getty, and Texaco going at the same time and not be a tough businessman.
Yeah.
And he was really rough on us, and it was great to be able to branch out. And I did much, much better when I did better. And then, of course, well, it's a whole long story, but he got jealous of the fact that we were doing so well on our own. And he kind of finagled his way into what we were doing. And it was crazy. But I can't complain because I did really well. So.
Okay. So when you decided to branch out on your own, are you talking about starting up your own business, or did you join another organization?
No. We started up our own business. It was a big time in unbranded gas. So we were doing, we had a Texaco distributorship, and we also had an unbranded business. And my partner and I went into stations that had repairs, and they didn't even want to bother with their gas. So they rented their pumps to us. And with what was going on in those days, the markup on gasoline was tremendous. And we ended up doing wholesaling and retailing. And we just did amazingly. We had fun. We made a lot of money. And I just wish I had been a little bit older to appreciate one of the things I could say to all the people that are listening, that you cannot rest on your laurels. You must be at it all the time, because you never know, just like that, things change.
You know, Jerry, I'm relying on some documentaries here and some YouTube videos, but keep me honest here, but wasn't that during the time, the early 80s, 80, 81, wasn't there an actual gas shortage in the US?
Yes. There were two of them, actually. There were two of them. The way it ended, they came up with, the government, they came up with a great idea, which was to go to odd and even license plates. You could, if you had an odd, and it was the last number of your license plate. So if you were three, you could get gas on the odd days. Every day was odd, even, odd, even, odd, even. And right about then, maybe a few weeks after they made that rule, the shortage was over. But there were two of them. And then there was a third one in the early 2000s where there was a bad hurricane in New York, and they couldn't get the product into the terminals, so that you couldn't get the gas to the stations. But I was out of the business by then.
But back in the day, call it 40 years ago now, I mean, when you are knee deep in it, we're owning these gas stations, that's your livelihood. I mean, that must have been challenging mentally to be able to sustain when you have no gas to sell.
Oh, well, there was all kinds of things that happened. I ended up with a really good friend from it. It's called State Set Aside, where you were able to put in some paperwork and maybe get an extra load or something like that. It wasn't as horrible as you would think, because you would get your allotment of gasoline, you would sell it out, you close the station and go home.
Okay. So it was more the consumers that were struggling with it, because you had as much fuel as we could have had anyways.
We couldn't get, well, we were able to get more than anybody else because we sold more than anybody else. But still, you know, if you ran out and you couldn't get gas until the next day, you would just close the station and go home. But I had, it's funny you bring this up, because I had a situation that, this is a crazy story, but it's so true. I was pumping gas at one of my father's places in a bad neighborhood in Brooklyn. and everybody got really slick, and there was a line for gas cans because people were putting gas in their gas cans so they would have some extra gas so they could, you know, keep in their garage or whatever the story may be. And I told the guy at about 3 o'clock, I said, "You're the last guy." The next guy pulled a gun on me. And literally. I said, okay, you're the next guy.
Go ahead.
That's a weird time. To this day, I'm shocked that I wasn't even worried. It was just such a crazy time. I actually felt that the guy did me a favor because when he pulled out his gun, everybody else scattered. He was the last customer. I was able to close the station.
So you thanked him.
I mean, pretty much. I mean, I didn't thank him, but
I
just never had a chance to even get worried about that he was going to shoot me or something, because it was just a crazy, crazy, crazy time. That's all.
Let's fast forward a bit here. I know that you had multiple runs at golf through most of the 80s into early 90s. How did you find golf? Did they find you? Did you get absorbed by them? Did you raise your hand? What happened there?
Well, like I said, at the end of the 80s, everything went kind of sour in the gas station business. All these, there were new laws that were put into effect, and you couldn't make the kind of money you made before. And I ended up trying to remember how exactly I went to golf, but I guess I applied and I was able to secure a job with them, but I was working for the major oil company. I wasn't working for myself anymore. Right. And actually the guy who hired me ended up not liking the fact that I was working for myself. He took offense to that in actuality. I had age discrimination in reverse. There was me and this other guy. He let us go because we were younger, not older. He kept the older guys and let us go. But I can attest to this for everybody out there. When something goes sour, you lose a job or you get laid off or fired or what have you, there's always something better around the corner. I really believe that. It may not happen to the next day, but I really believe that that's the case.
And I was going to say the same thing. So do I. But I'm curious about something. So if I have my time right, this is now the early 90s, 91, 92. And you've been in the industry, including working while you're in school, for the better part of 20 years. It's pretty much what you know. It's in your bloodlines. It's in your DNA. And all of a sudden, you're not doing that anymore. Early 90s, it's hammer time, different time. Things are happening. And so was that a scary time for you, the uncertainty? While you look back on it now and you think, okay, that was a good thing. But at the time, you don't know what's next. And usually change can really result in apprehension. And so what was it like, you know, in the early 90s when now you have to find a new career for you?
Yeah, it was very much so. As a matter of fact, I like to say all the time, the only person I know of that really did well in the 90s is Howard Stern. He's the only person I can think of. I mean, I'm sure there are others, people that I don't know, but the 90s, the 80s were fantastic. I cannot say enough about the 80s. But in the 90s, everything just really changed. And it was very, very difficult. I mean, working for golf, I was wearing a suit and tie every day. I was handling corporate accounts, and it was very, very different. Writing contracts. It was a very, very difficult time, but I was married for like 15 years at that time. I had two young children, and it was not a time to, I just had to go with whatever I could at that time.
You have responsibilities.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why I did that. It wasn't a great time at golf. I did have a couple of guys that helped, but for the most part, you know, this guy. And when I originally started there was a different manager, and they pushed him up to a different title. And then they brought us this other guy, and he just didn't like me because I was in the business for myself. And
yeah,
he found that to be a problem.
So once you moved on from golf, were you out of work for any length of time, and what was next?
Not really. What happened was I got a hold of, I was with Bally Total Fitness for a little while. I did corporate sales for them. I had Avis as one of my biggest accounts. But
so you go from golf, oil, and gas into Bally Total Fitness.
Right.
That's not exactly a linear shift here.
No, Jay. But I'm going to tell you something that is amazing. And then we'll get into what I did with Four Star for close to 20 years. But there are so many things in business that are alike. It's incredible. And maybe not so much Bally Total Fitness from the gas business, but like I said, I knew somebody at the Bally Total Fitness, and I did corporate sales there for a little while. That was a good job. It was interesting. And one day they just brought us into Manhattan. They had opened a brand new club and they expected it to be gangbusters, and it wasn't. It was on Wall Street. They thought they were going to write crazy numbers over there, and it didn't happen. So we were called into a meeting on a Monday morning. And what happened was we thought they were just going to restructure our commissions. And all of a sudden, one of the guys was working on his computer, and some big guy with big muscles came over, pulled the plug on the computer, and took it away. And we knew we were in trouble.
And so after how many years was this with Bally?
Well, it was only with Bally's for about 2 years.
About
a
two
year
years.
And a half, 2 years. A year to 2 years, something like that. And then I went home on the train, and I remember looking up to the sky, and I said, "You're testing me. You're testing me, but I will not fail." And my ex-wife, she looked in the newspaper and saw this ad to selling hair salon stuff. And said, "I'll call. What's the difference?" So a guy met me at the bagel store. We looked alike. We would go into places and people thought we were brothers. So I'd always ask him, "Did you hire me because we look alike?" He said, "No." And I was there for 20 years. I was at Four Star for 20 years.
Okay, so you went in on a whim. You're out of work. You need a job. Let's take a flyer on this thing. And it turns out to be 20 years.
Yep. Oh, okay. And it was not smooth sailing. There were at least three times where I started driving to the office to quit.
Well, you know, over that 20-year stretch, if I think back in my history here, my prime was my 20s, I should say, was the 90s. So I remember the dot-com phase, late 90s, when that was coming out. I certainly remember September 11th on that particular day and the impact it had. You were there local. And so the impact on the world there, Katrina hits a few years later, the impact it had there. And then of course the mortgage crisis in 2007, 2008, 2009, given range. So you went through a lot of bubbles and bumps along the way that the world was going through. And so a 20 year run with one company, a lot of bumps on the road here, but what was that like for you?
Well, I was fortunate because first of all, I have a good gift of gab. I did not excel at product knowledge, but I was always good at remembering people's trials and tribulations. I had a discussion with one of the managers over at Four Star, and he said, "Always talk business first, talk personal afterwards." And I said, "I don't really agree. I think you should talk personal first. It's a lot easier. They calm down, they're nice, and it's easier to segue into."
Like it warms it up.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, but I was, if somebody's mother's uncle's cousin broke his leg, I didn't even have to write it down. I would come in there the next time and I'd say, "How's your uncle?" And I really did care. It wasn't just a scheme or anything. I do care about people. I really, truly do. And that helped me. Plus, the biggest thing for me is that I ended up having, it was a stroke of luck. I came in just about the time where this account came about. He had 32 salons, and I took care of his account. And I was writing crazy numbers. But I had a bunch of other accounts too, but he, with the 32 accounts, this guy was buying, the average salesperson would be doing about $10,000, $12,000 a week. I was doing $30,000, $40,000 a week.
Like he was your bread and butter.
He was my bread. And okay. He loved me, and I loved him too. To this day, I love the guy. He's such a great guy. And to show you how things have changed, you know how many salons he has now? Six.
Six. So did the industry shrink on you back in 2015, 2016, when you decided to move on? Because you're there the better part of two decades. So what was behind your decision to leave New York and now go into San Diego?
Very simple, very simple. There were two or three reasons. One, I saw what was happening to the salon business as well. Like I said, it happens to every business eventually. The guy from Amazon came in and everything changed when he came around. I like to look at it as thank God he didn't come in the late 90s, early 2000s. He came in or about 2012, 15, whatever it was. And it just killed retail. Then I was getting divorced. And although we're still good friends, we get along fine. That's the only way to go in my book. But my kids, my son moved out here first. And then my daughter met a guy at a conference in New Orleans, and he lived half hour from my son. She didn't end up with him. She ended up with somebody else. But they're both here and they live 15 minutes apart. And because of what was happening in the business, I said, this is the time. I got to go. And I left and I came to San Diego. And I've been doing a bunch of things. It's been a wild ride here in San Diego. But it's all worth it in my book.
And did you move out to San Diego with a job or without a job?
No, starting completely from scratch.
Okay. And did you have any network in San Diego? I know that this point in your career, you're established with a network of individuals, but did you know anybody in San Diego locally?
Nope. Not really.
I've followed your kids. I love it.
Yeah. I've done a bunch of different things. I worked for a construction company, not for me. Okay. They tried to keep me there. They did everything they could to keep me there. I said, listen, I love you guys too. Because I was very, when we had the meetings, I was like the only one who would speak up. Everybody was just quiet and they loved me and they wanted to keep me. But I said, guys, I hate this. I'm being honest with you. It's just not for me. I'm not into selling roofs and kitchens. And it's just not what, it's just not my thing. So I had to leave. Then I worked for a company, this is hysterical, selling funeral plots and cemetery plots and funerals.
In San Diego.
That was crazy also. And then I finally got a job with salons. So I was back in the salon business, but because of Amazon, I was writing maybe a tenth of what I was writing back in New York. And when COVID hit, they had to lay me off and they never rehired me.
So let's chat about that, because here we are, you know, end of October, 2020, difficult year for most of us on a different level that we weren't really expecting or know how to navigate through. Mm-hmm. So you're in San Diego, appreciate that your kids are close, but California has been hit with some pretty big numbers. You've been impacted from a job perspective. And I'm curious how 2020 has been for you professionally, but also even mentally. How have you been hanging in there?
Interesting. That is probably why I'm involved in a course right now about positivity, and that's helped me tremendously. You take it in stride. I mean, the guy that one of the guys that I was with when. Back in New York, he's 85 years old, I think. He said to me on the phone, he said, you're a survivor. Mm. I said, thanks, Ted. I appreciate that. It hasn't been easy, but I think this course has really helped me and turned me around. And look, 80% of our thoughts every day are negative. That's like a proven fact. It's hard to believe.
Scary. I do,
but it's true because, and it's all because of our paradigms and what we believed as we were growing up. Your parents only do the best they can do. All we are is human beings. That's all we are. And you do the best you can, but you're always telling your kids, don't touch this. Don't do that. This is the best thing for you. We're just doing our best to bring up our children the best way we can, but there are times where, everybody's their own personality. And look at a child up to the age of six has their own imagination, and they imagine all these things. And all of a sudden you go to school and your imagination gets taken away from you, and you form your habits and your thoughts. All we are is computers. We're just computers, and you have to deal with that as you get older. But I'm getting off on a tangent. But that's how I've navigated 2020. It's been difficult, but you want to know something? I look at it, I'm a glass half full kind of guy, and I look at it that there are people in way worse shape than I am. Thank God I have a place I have a nice apartment. I have, I can eat.
You're healthy.
I have some money saved up. So I really can't complain. Who am I to complain? And what is it going to do for you to complain anyway?
Yeah. Well, I certainly dig the mindset that you're right, that it probably could be a lot worse. And so if you look at it from that perspective, let's just figure this out. But it's been an amazing career, Jerry. I mean, 20 years in oil and gas, a couple different opportunities with your dad on your own. You then spend some time personal workout equipment. Okay, great. Then you get into selling gels and mousses and salon products and scissors and whatever. And so you end up going 20 years there, a lot of different shifts. And then you decide, you know what? I've had enough of New York. It's now time for me to go west. And you follow your kids, and now you're in beautiful San Diego. And you're navigating through a bit of a turbulent time here, but I'm glad to hear that you're hanging in there pretty good. It sounds like you've got a pretty good path now. And so share with me, what's next for you?
Well, right now I'm with a company called VirusStar, and we are selling a cleaning service. It's actually a self-sanitizing machine. And we're looking companies and businesses, restaurants, hospitals, what have you, stay healthy and clean. Once the machine is used at the location, it can last for up to 4 to 6 months. So as opposed to people wiping down tables and spraying every single day, they have a way to keep their place clean. And obviously we're going to have a new normal, whatever the new normal is. And at that point, we'll see what happens. But that's what I'm doing now. And I'm also very big into this course that I'm taking, and I'd like to branch out eventually and help people by changing their mindset, changing their paradigms. And that's where I think I'm really headed. We were talking before about how even though the hair salon business and the gas station business seem so different, they're so not so different.
Just the brand, just the logo on the bag, right?
But it's also like you have smells of bleaches in the hair salons. You have the smell of gas in the gas business. There's crazy stuff that happens in both businesses. That it's amazing. And I have found that dealing with women in business and dealing with men in business, it's really not much of a difference. I mean, I'm glad I had that experience of being in the hair salon business for 20 years, because I'm so ahead of the game when it comes to understanding the opposite sex. Because we are so different. And I know a lot more about women than I ever did before. And I'm so happy about that, because unlike most of us, there doesn't have to be a right or wrong to everything. There could be a different opinion on things. And that's the next thing I'm hoping for also, besides doing the mindset, changing people's mindset and trying to help people keep their places clean. I'm also, looking for my other half, I'm the other half. Right. I'm the other half, the better half. Right.
Well, because Jerry, it's been so much fun speaking to you, man. I'm fascinated by your career here. Sincerely, I appreciate you freeing up the time and being so transparent in your conversation with us here. Last question I have for you, as you know, I always like to ask anybody who's a guest on the podcast, if there was any one piece of advice or feedback or something that maybe has been a pretty good foundation for you in your life up until this point, anything that you would want to share with anybody listening right now?
Sure. There are a couple of things, actually. Be grateful. Be grateful for everything. Be grateful. I say almost every day. I know I do say it every day. I'm so grateful for what I have had, for what I now have, and for what I shall have. If you're grateful, you'll be surprised how much comes back to you. Stay away from negative town, try to be positive. And one of the other things that I've learned is, and this is very important, if you're looking to make more money and what have you, money comes to where it's welcome. If you constantly say, I have no money, this is horrible, money is the root of all evil, money growth, get out of that immediately and talk about abundance as opposed to lack.
Love it. Jerry, thanks so much for being here, man. I've really enjoyed speaking with you.
I really have. I've had a great time, and it was nice to look back on my whole career. And thank you, because you've made my day. So.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. So everybody, let's wrap another one up right now. Remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're online at sellingisimple.com. We'll catch you next week, and be safe, everybody. We'll be right back.